I believe we have to be the ones that shift our perspective. We have to be able to come shoulder to shoulder with the people that we rely on to actually have a profitable and successful business. And that patient who had an adverse outcome, who is not going to sue, it's not because the outcome wasn't that bad. It's because they believed everything was done in the best interest of them. And then the patients who do, they believe the opposite. And so if we just think about the experience vital, are we doing everything we can to completely control the perspective that this patient is 100% saying at all times, this practice is acting on my best behalf?
Hey, it's Justin Harvey. Thanks for tuning into the Anesthesia and Pain Management Success Podcast. With APM Success, we take a close look at important topics pertaining to business, practice management, personal finance, and careers for anesthesiologists and pain management physicians. We work hard to take your critical questions straight to the experts. Thanks for listening.
Hello, welcome to episode 234 of APM Success. Very pleased to be joined by friend of the show, Mr. Zed Williamson. Zed is the CEO and founder of Trackable Med, as well as the founder of the Physician Growth Accelerator, which is a consulting business that helps private practitioners get out of their own way in terms of the growth and efficiency of their practice. Really pleased to have Zed here today to talk business. Welcome, Zed.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Justin. Appreciate it.
So as listeners who recognize your voice from our show will be familiar, you sort of came to this Physician Growth Accelerator business from a lot of experience in helping doctors market to patients, and then in finding ways to successfully send those patients to the physicians who are looking for them. What you observed was doctors aren't that good necessarily at helping patients who have decided that they need help and who are a good fit, helping those patients to be onboarded smoothly and have a good patient experience such that the outcomes and the reviews and every part of the sort of the downstream effects of that patient encounter are positive. So tell us a little bit about the genesis of this idea for you, and then we're going to zoom in on parts of your process that I think physicians are going to find interesting.
Sure. Yeah, the genesis comes from, you know, originally I come from the advertising world, and we were good at getting patients to raise their hand and say, hey, I want treatment. And this is 13 years ago, where the problem was patients would then call a practice and it would fall apart because practices weren't set up to properly intake these patients and convert them into appointments. So immediately we said, holy moly, we need to handle that. And that's when we started an appointment setting call center as part of our services. So that's 13 years ago. And boom, results skyrocket, because instead of dealing with the constraint of the office ability to take a phone call, we were handling them because offices miss a ton of calls. And business is successful, right? We're going through, we're working with practices. But here's what's interesting, and this is just part of probably my weird brain, but if you provide the same results to 10 different practices and the practices have 10 different outcomes based on that input, there's other things that are a problem. And that's constraint theory. And so what we realized was we could keep just doing the work we were doing and then blame the practice for not being able to capitalize on the increased patient volume, or we could take our same systems thought process and understanding of neuroscience and human behavior and actually apply it to all these points of constraint within the practice. And that's the birthplace of Physician Growth Accelerator. Some practices, they don't need more patients, even if they are saying they do. Some practices, the constraint is deep within their business and they don't realize it because they're working hard every day treating patients. And so we saw our ability to do a diagnostic and say, here is where the constraint is. We need to either exploit that constraint or we need to create more throughput. And if the easiest way to wrap your head around this from a visual standpoint, imagine wherever you live, anytime you're on a highway, freeway, interstate, it goes from four lanes to three. What happens? Traffic. Makes sense. That happens all the time in practices, in any business. But what we tend to do is we tend to complain about the traffic as opposed to thinking about how do we actually fix the throughput?
Makes sense. I think that this is, I mean, I'm remembering back to my managerial accounting classes in undergrad, where this is all like sort of the 101 of business and management, but these principles are not necessarily intuitive, and it is really important to get your brain wrapped around constraint theory and understanding. You can't just, like, more patience is not always the answer. In fact, in many cases, it can be counterproductive.
The opposite.
And,
yes, exactly.
Yeah, and it can be a distraction and create even new problems that are not helping the bottom line. So I want to explore your practice vitals paradigm and then zoom in on the part which you call the capture stage, which is once patients have decided, yes, I need help, and they are a good fit, how do we help them to engage with the practice?
Yeah. So the architecture of it, we basically put it into three stages. There's the decision stage, which is a patient exists out in the universe somewhere. They have an issue. They may be aware of it. They may not, but they are in that standpoint where they're not sure who can help them. They're not sure what to do. The capture stage, which you mentioned, means the patient is actively trying to find a solution. They are reaching out to whoever they believe can provide help. And then the experience stage is they've actually seen you and they are now in the process of getting treated. And those three major stages, there are, I know this is going to be a little overwhelming, but don't worry, we're not going to go through all of it, but there's 9 points of constraint across those three stages. And what's just really important to think about that is if we bring up that highway or interstate idea, imagine you have 9 lanes, and at some point, any of those lanes can be chopped down to 8, to 2, to 1, to 4. That's what's happening in these practices. And that is not a good way to get traffic to travel one place to another. And so that's the point of having these constraints identified and uncovering where the problem is.
For our listeners who are listening auditorily, I'm going to throw up the graphic here, which kind of explains this process. So if you're on the YouTube channel right now, you're looking at this model with the three different phases, each of which has three components. We're going to zoom in on the capture stage, which is the second component. You can also view this at physiciangrowthaccelerator.com if you want to know what I'm talking about. It's right there on the homepage. I think that this is a really important model because it gives you a checklist, essentially. It gives physicians a checklist to if things don't feel efficient, if there's a backlog somewhere, if you're busy and not profitable, working through this checklist can be a really useful starting point to understand where are things broken, where is the leak happening, where is the overwhelm happening, and it can be a useful tool. So
yeah, I think busy and not profitable is a great sign. Another one is a ceiling you keep hitting. You know, you're just, it seems like things should be better, and you get these little sparks of like, yes, we did it. And then it goes away for a while. That's another really good sign. Or it just feels like no matter what you do on the inside, all you do is feel busy and you're not seeing the output of it.
All right. So talk us through this capture stage. And I'm really interested in this. I think one of the things that I find so intriguing, or I guess intellectually attractive about this model, is it's kind of like this understanding the sales cycle and the psychology behind sales from the classic business standpoint is a really important part of this process. And it's, again, another one of those things like, yeah, you don't learn this in med school. You definitely don't learn it in residency. And yet, if you're a private practitioner, understanding the science of how people make decisions is actually, you're definitely going to need it if you're going to be successful. So this component, this middle part, is the fulcrum where someone goes from deciding they need help to getting the help that they need. And that's why I'm excited to talk about the capture stage. So explain to us the three component parts and how you break it down.
Sure. So the first one is the conversion vital. So conversion is basically a patient has actively made a decision and they are trying to get in front of you. And so they are doing things like submitting a form online. They're calling the office. They are actively saying, please help me. The bias vital means that they've actually contacted you and something happened in between them saying, yes, I want an appointment, and them actually showing up in the office. This, you know, no shows or patients going, you know, they're constantly rescheduling. They just, they fall off the map. And then finally, the experience vital is basically they've seen you, but they are not following through and actually booking treatment. And those three things are very separate. And you can imagine if there is a constraint at any of them, it makes all the work you did to get them there basically pointless.
And so if you're working with a practice and you're helping them assess these three vitals, what types of data points, what kinds of signs are you seeing? What are you analyzing to assess the health in these different areas of conversion, bias, yeah, and experience?
It's a good question. So on conversion vital, we want to know the input, meaning how many patients are actually calling the office, how many patients are submitting a form saying, hey, please reach out to me to answer my questions or book an appointment. And what we'd want to understand is the conversion rate. And that's why it's called the conversion vital. And conversion rate just means if 10 patients call you, what percent of those patients go, yes, I want an appointment? And here's where there's a pretty interesting breakdown that happens in the healthcare industry. Let's say you are offering a solution that's not covered by Medicare, but you help patients of that age, and they would benefit greatly from the treatment. What can happen at the conversion vital, if it's not structured right, is a patient calls you, and the structure of the call allows that patient to go, do you take Medicare? And the person goes, no, we don't, and it's over. And what we would state is, was that really the question the patient had? It wasn't. But we answered this fake question, and you just killed the opportunity to help that patient immediately. And that's a really important part of the conversion vital is in healthcare, we can assume, we do assume, well, you know, Margaret called, she asked if we took Medicare, and we don't, so she can't be a patient. Actually, Margaret just doesn't understand how much value you bring to her. And so she's made an inappropriate decision based on a lack of understanding. When it comes to the bias vital, did you have something to add to that?
So to zoom in on this conversion question, I'm sure it varies based on specialty and procedure and what you're marketing for and who you're getting. But do you have a sense of baseline, like healthy conversion rate for somebody who's attracting roughly the right kind of patients is X, and what we might see if it's room for improvement is Y?
Yes, we generally see 20% conversion, and we should be expecting 70.
Oh, that's a lot of difference.
It's a big deal. Yeah. So imagine the difference between those has nothing to do with any expenditure. Think of the power of that. So as a business, you spent no more money, but your competitor is doing 70% and you're doing 20. That's a problem.
And so is that just a training gap, like teaching the people who answer the phones how to reframe the Medicare example, like sort of deflecting that question and getting to the heart of the issue? Or is it what are the common problems there?
Yeah. First, it's belief. And belief matters more than training, because training is only as valuable as strong the belief is. So does the person talking with the patients actually believe that you help patients, or do they believe they're supposed to tell patients, no, we don't take Medicare? Once belief is in line, then it is training, because we have taught ourselves as a society that the world exists to answer my question, and we never ask the right question. I mean, I did it, so we all do this. Before we recorded this, you know, I'm in this studio that's in our office building, and there's a vent right above my head. And sometimes that vent turns on because the air conditioning, and it makes a bad sound on the mic. Well, so I went into the office and I asked the wrong question. I said, hey, are you guys comfortable with the temperature right now? That really wasn't my real question. My real question was, is it okay if I keep the AC off? But because our brain is trained to kind of fade in to understanding, we ask these wrong questions. And so when the staff is answering calls. They're busy, right? They're also, they're calling insurance companies. They're dealing with existing patients. They have people checking in. So someone calls and they go, hey, I have a question. Sure. Do you take Medicare? No, we don't. Oh, okay. Okay. And actually the person most of the time has a little relief, the employee, because now, okay, good. I can get back to the other stuff that's in front of me. And that's why belief matters so much, right? If they believe beyond a doubt that they are there to help that patient get out of whatever struggle that they're having, they wouldn't answer those questions that way. They wouldn't set up the conversation in a way that would even create those answers. And then there's also, from a training standpoint, measurement. You know, very rarely do medical practices measure typical key performance indicators or KPIs within the business. Meaning, if you have a website and a patient submits a form, I would guess most people listening to this or watching don't know how many of those they get a week, and they don't know how quickly the staff responds and how they respond or how often they respond. So think of the difference between two practices. One practice gets a web form coming in. The patient says, hey, I'm interested in an appointment. I have this issue. And one practice calls them back within 30 minutes. Another practice calls them back in 4 days. One practice calls them back until they actually talk. I mean, one practice calls back, leaves a message, and then forgets about it. Very different outcomes.
And as a personal anecdote, Zed, one of our mutual clients that you are working on, I enjoyed sort of observing this process where, you know, we identified, here's the patient avatar, here's the procedures that we're targeting, here's the media we're going to use to reach those patients. Increase in inbound leads, and we identified the conversion specifically as, oh, this is, and what you and your team said was, you know, this conversion looks like not that great, and it caused you to sort of like look under the hood a little bit, and what you said was, oh, I think there's like a staff problem, or a training problem, or a belief problem, perhaps. There's a problem with the way that the inbound leads are being handled. And the net effect, and this was actually news to the physician, and it was a correct observation. And so I just think it's intriguing how this, even just going through this process and looking in particular at the conversion and at that point of connection between a prospective patient and a representative of your office, that's a really important touch point. And if you don't know what's going on there, or even if you think you do, like, why do you think that you do? How much visibility do you really have to that? What is your conversion rate? And how much of the shortfall do you attribute to something like belief or training? And if you can go from 20% to 70% without increasing your FTEs under your employment, that's a huge win, obviously. So this is a really, I view this as like the linchpin on which the whole thing is held together. So
it really is. It's funny because you're busy in practice, you're looking forward, you kind of assume that things are standardized, but it's similar to, imagine if you were driving somewhere and you just started paying attention to your gas mileage, and your gas mileage was really bad, and it just felt like your vehicle didn't accelerate correctly, but you never look into it. And so you just keep doing what you're doing. And it turns out you were dragging a trailer that had 10,000 pounds of bricks on it. That's what this is. Now, it would be easy to notice that if we're driving a car, you know, with a trailer with bricks, but we don't think about the unseen things in business, that sometimes there's this balance between, I don't want to know because that means I have to fix it and I don't get to just blame the universe for not helping me. And so there's that balance between, what I like to say personally is I like to declare war. Like, okay, let's declare war on the conversion vital. That means I need all of the data to understand how we attack this and achieve absolute success. And the difference in a practice between someone who does that and doesn't is just insane.
Tell me about the second of the three components, bias.
So the bias vital is, we assume in practice that patients are raising their hand, interested in being helped. And so now they should just do what everybody says. And they book an appointment and people kind of walk away from it. Like, okay, Margaret booked an appointment. We should see her Tuesday at 10 a.m. here's the problem, is this stuff does not exist in a vacuum. So let's say that appointment is 4 weeks into the future. Let's say the type of specialty you're in, there's a lot of information online that Margaret can go now search. Let's say your website has videos of procedures you've done. And so Margaret has this appointment. It's coming up 4 weeks away. And now what her brain does is bias takes over, and she is going to be in a position to keep herself safe by whatever heuristic or bias is influencing her. That might mean, well, let me spend some more time on their website. Oh my gosh, look at that video. Ooh, I don't want to go there. Or, you know, it's so far away. Maybe this isn't that big of a deal. This isn't that important to me. They probably didn't really expect me to show up anyway. Or let's say you tell Margaret she has to do a bunch of work to be able to come in for the appointment. Margaret doesn't do the work. So now Margaret's bias goes, oh, I didn't do the work. They don't expect me to be there. There's so many things that influence the gap between Margaret saying, okay, I'll see you Tuesday at 2 p.m. and Margaret actually getting there Tuesday at 2 p.m. The kind of stuff we've uncovered, offices that are difficult to find. So you work in your office. It's really easy for you to get to it. Margaret's never been there. And maybe you're in a weird building that doesn't have a sign. So when she shows up, she can't find it. She calls to get directions. No one answers the phone. She gets frustrated. I guess this really isn't that great of an operation. She doesn't go to her appointment. Or she finds that information online that scares her out of going. Or maybe she's been thinking about doing something about this for years and everybody's kind of pushing her towards it, but she's afraid. She will find any reason not to show up. And typically the office looks at those patients as just dumb. They just go, oh, well, they just wasted our time. They booked, how dare they book an appointment and not show up? And they take no effort into understanding the perspective of the patient.
Interestingly, I'm as you're describing this, I'm thinking, oh, I experience the investment management equivalent of what you're describing as my prospective physician clients who like book a call on the website. And this is not common for me, I'd say, because I don't think I would have categorized it as concretely and precisely as you did, but I understand there's anxiety around this. When they book a call, I'm reaching out, hey, making the connection, showing some humanity. But definitely, there's a dread. There's a sense of insufficiency, inadequacy. There's a prospective client who's used to being the smartest person in the room all the time in many cases, and they objectively are in many cases. But when it comes to money, sometimes they're not. That's a source of shame. That's a source of fear. And that shame and fear is powerful in terms of determining the actions that one then takes to show or not for that 20-minute talk to Justin and see what's going on call. And so I can confirm this is a big driver of human action. And what types of metrics are you looking at in order to understand the role of bias in a physician practice?
Yeah. So with this specific one, we're looking at no-show rate. We're looking at cancellations, repetitive reschedules, as a percentage. And the challenge with this is, sometimes this is a little bit harder to drill down because the office hasn't kept great data in the first place. Sometimes it's easier for someone to just delete a patient off a schedule as opposed to really marking them as a no-show. Or definitions matter. Does everyone get marked a no-show when some of them was an actual cancellation? Does someone get marked a no-show and then get rescheduled? And so it's about understanding how accurate the data is, what the definitions are, and then understanding where there's opportunity.
How do you think about the carrot and the stick in this department? Because I've been to plenty of those practice management sessions where it's like, oh, just charge a $50 no-show fee and that'll make them show up. And it's a kind of blunt instrument, perhaps. But, could be a potential part of the solution, but perhaps doesn't fully account for the complexity psychologically of the patient journey.
Right. So here's what I would say. I don't have an opinion of whether that's a good or a bad idea. It would be best to do it and measure it. And this is what I would suggest we look for is, do you reduce your no-show rate, but also reduce your total number of seen appointments? So if I have 100 booked appointments and I have a 20% no-show rate, that means I'm seeing 80. If I put in we're going to charge you if you don't show up, and so only 60 book an appointment, but it's 100% no-show, 100% show rate, would you rather 60 show up or 80? And that would be the question I would look at. And just understanding how it impacts the practice. Now, some practices, there is an impact on the practice from a constraint if there are a lot of unused spots, and it impacts scheduling. It impacts a lot of other things. And so there's always a balance there. I don't think there's you must do it one way. But if you just try to band-aid this by charging money without understanding what creates the issue, that's probably not your best bet. We've seen probably the biggest impact on this is making someone log in to your EMR before their appointment to get all of their information in. EMRs generally suck from a user experience standpoint. So you have Margaret, let's call it Margaret again. She tries to log in. She has challenges. She doesn't get it done. She now believes you don't expect her to show up. So why should she? Charging her money is probably just going to get her to, maybe I'll call back and book the appointment.
Or maybe she'll just leave you a 1-star review.
Yes, that's another 100%. Yeah, you got to love those reviews of a physician that says the front office staff was rude.
Yeah. Or I didn't even see them and they charged me $50. What the heck?
It's as a physician, you have to generally understand that the public views you as a subject matter expert. They view you as wealthy. They view healthcare, depending on what their experience is, what part of the country it is, what age they are, as not necessarily being in their best, benefit. And so all those things stack against you. And so you have to take that perspective into understanding.
Yeah. And I would say until I took the red pill 6 years ago and sort of began to understand the distinction between like doctors and hospitals, which in every like major publication reporting about anything in terms of healthcare policy, it's like insurance on one side, doctors and hospitals on the other, and they're doing this.
Right.
I now know that that is like a terrible misrepresentation. But in the past, when I get that doctor's bill, I'm like, what the heck, Dr. Smith? This wasn't what I was expecting. And now I understand, holy cow, like poor Dr. Smith, they probably lost money on me if I asked them a couple follow-up questions and they had, 52 patients to see in clinic that day. And I'm quite empathetic now to the plight of the physician in the scheme of who the players are, where the lobbying dollars are being spent and how those dynamics unfold in the real world.
100%. And the patients have no idea.
Yeah. So that's bias. Tell me about the experience component of this vital.
Yeah. So imagine if you have these first two vitals dialed in, that means the patient's in your office. So this is all about that first experience, because that first experience sets the expectation for any kind of trust that the patient is going to have in you providing a solution. It has nothing to do with the surgeon or physician's skill. That does not matter. It's about what does this feel like when I'm here and I'm going to attribute my future based on my experience today. And so you imagine all the biases that maybe would have kept the person from showing up for the first appointment, and they actually worked through them. So they're there, they're in the office, but things like wait time, communication, is it transparent? If a patient has to wait an hour to be seen, there's a big difference between a patient who waits an hour and is never talked to compared to a patient who's communicated with. If the staff feels like they are there to help you and that they understand your struggles and that they have witnessed patients like you achieve a better outcome, that's a lot different than someone who's, scrolling on Facebook at the front desk and looking up at you as you're considered an interruption to their day. We've talked to multiple patients. We actually did because we do bias interviews of patients of clients, and we did one recently. The patient was over the moon on their outcome. Greatest outcome ever. This was incredible. I'll never recommend to anyone else see them. And that was a really weird statement. And so we dove into that a little bit. Like, I'm sorry, wait, you were really happy? Oh man, it was perfect. The treatment was perfect. I feel so much better. It was more than I could have expected. But you'll never recommend anyone? No, no. It was a horrible experience. The staff was rude. I felt like I was an interruption. I waited so long. So this person had all the inertia to get him through all that horribleness. And the medical outcome was astounding to them. And they will never recommend another patient go there. Just let that sink in. That's how much the experience vital means.
Yeah. And so there's the immediate business impact. And interestingly, I'm recalling back to when I talked to some of the MedMal experts, brokers, really insurance brokers who help position physicians with the right MedMal policies. And we're talking about, like, you know, MedMal prophylaxis. How do you keep yourself from being sued? And I can guarantee you, if you show up, the person at the front desk is, you know, doing the endless scroll, and you impose on them to introduce yourself and say, I'm here for my appointment. And then you sit and you wait and you're just annoyed the whole time. No one's communicating. And then, God forbid, you have some sort of, you know, adverse outcome or something. You're going to be much more like hairpin trigger to take legal action than you are if there's at every juncture an empathetic human connection who is trying to create a good experience. And then with the physician creating that personal connection, there's going to be more understanding and more. And I've had clients who have had this happen, and there was like a bad medical thing that happened. And they said, you know what, should they have done it differently? Probably. Was it standard of care? Probably not. But we don't want to file suit because we felt this human connection throughout the process. So I think that, I mean, there's a lot of good reasons to really focus on the patient experience. Your business is one of them. Clinical outcomes are probably another one, because if they're more engaged with the treatment process and taking your advice, then they're going to do better down the line. But also, like, you're less likely to get sued.
I mean, just that's what in business, we have to pay attention to these things, even though it's not fun. Because here's someone listening right now is going, what you're saying makes total sense. Like, I doubt anyone disagrees, but what they're asking is, how do I do that? Why don't patients understand how busy I am? I get called to the hospital for this emergency. I do this. The only reason someone's waiting is because I'm helping another patient. Why do they think they're more important than that patient? Like, that's the problem, is that everyone is speaking truth. They're just speaking it from different perspectives. And as the business, I believe we have to be the ones that shift our perspective. We have to be able to come shoulder to shoulder with the people that we rely on to actually have a profitable and successful business. And that patient who had an adverse outcome, who is not going to sue, it's not because the outcome wasn't that bad. It's because they believed everything was done in the best interest of them. And then the patients who do, they believe the opposite. And so if we just think about the experience vital, are we doing everything we can to completely control the perspective that this patient is 100% saying at all times, this practice is acting on my best behalf?
This one is a little bit different because for conversion, we have clear data and ratios to measure. Bias is the same way. Experience gets a lot more qualitative. So tell me how you would assess the health of the experience vital in a physician's practice.
Yeah, the good thing is you can still use data for this one, and it's another conversion point. It's the conversion point from first appointment to a treatment, and sometimes to a diagnostic. So depending on the specialty, depending on what we're dealing with, if they're at that first appointment and we need the patient to do another thing, that conversion rate is what tells us how healthy this is. The challenge there is you have to be able to dig into the data from a CPT code standpoint, because you would not want to, let's say the patient was not a candidate for whatever the treatment was. We wouldn't want that data to paint a false picture. So you'd want to understand true diagnosis, and here's the suggestion from the practice of what the next step should be. And once you have narrowed that data down, what's the percent of those people who go, okay, I trust you?
when you're looking at this conversion for your physician clients, if it's found to be wanting, what do you do?
So you mean, how do you fix it?
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to dig into what this is probably the most difficult one, from the standpoint of identifying what to fix, but it's really interpersonal communication likely happening human to human at the office. Patient interviews is a great way to uncover things, because you can do the interview in a way where the patient gives you insight into experience without creating any negative for the practice. Employee interview. And then if you can, you know, what does that conversation sound like between the physician and the patient?
Are there any other common pain points or like shortcomings or misconceptions, or like, well, pretty much every practice I look at has this wrong in this, in one of these three vitals that you commonly encounter?
Usually it's the mistake of assumption. A patient is sick or in pain. The assumption is, if that's real, they'll get it fixed. And so I just need to provide the service, as opposed to the idea that this is a little bit less of the clinical aspect of healthcare, and it's about that connection. So it's generally this disbelief that that matters. It's, I'm a good doctor. We help patients. If someone chooses not to use us, that's on them. That's not on us. And so that's a belief aspect. If someone believes that and refuses to change that belief, you're not going to fix this vital. And maybe that's okay. Like, I'm not saying that you can't have a successful business without it. If you fix everything else, you know, the idea is increasing throughput to the standpoint of matching the capacity of your practice. If you're at capacity, you're happy with your business, your vitals are healthy enough for you to achieve that at a level of stress that is okay, you're not going home and being a jerk to your family. And if this is the one vital where you're like, nope, patients either got to decide to move forward or not, we do good work, they're dumb if they don't, it's just, you can do that.
Makes sense. I really enjoyed today's conversation. I feel like I'm learning things that I want to do differently in my business because of things that I'm learning from you, Zed. So I appreciate your perspective today. For our listeners, APMsuccess.com/234. We'll have some links to the show, some of the items that we discussed, some visuals, and Zed's website, ways to get in touch with him. Thanks for joining us today, Zed. Really enjoyed today's conversation.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
If you liked what you heard this week, head on over to APMsuccess.com, where you can find more content and free resources to help you build a successful career in anesthesia and pain management. If you wanted to leave a review in iTunes, I'd also really appreciate it. Thanks for using some of your valuable time to join me today on APM Success.